one would think that the mitzvah that I would have chosen from Lech Lecha is the obvious only mitzvah that's mentioned in Lech Lecha, which is Bris Milah. But there's another mitzvah that I think is more relevant to all of us at all times, okay, and that is the mitzvah of Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Lech Lecha. It's the first mitzvah the Rabbanu Shem gave Avram Avinu to leave Chutz La'aretz and to settle in Eretz Yisrael. And that is the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And we will see in the process of what we're going to discuss that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael has a connection to the mitzvah of Bris Milah too. There is a connection between the two, and we will explain what that connection is. Now, the mitzvah in general, and again, there's no time to go into all the various details of any of the mitzvahs we're going to discuss, so we're going to discuss them more generally. But the mitzvah basically is to originally conquer Eretz Yisrael. In the time of Yahushua, everybody agrees there was a mitzvah to conquer Eretz Yisrael originally and to settle it, not to leave it in the hands of Goyim, certainly not to let remain the seven nations who occupied it to begin with. Ultimately, we're not even allowed to let Goyim live in Eretz Yisrael who don't keep the seven mitzvahs of Noah. Whether there is a mitzvah to leave somebody who was born in Chutz La'aretz, for him to leave his home and settle in Eretz Yisrael, whether there is a mitzvah or not to do that, that is a matter of dispute. According to almost all opinions, even today, there is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Even if one doesn't have a chiyuv, he's not obligated to leave Chutz La'aretz and come to settle in Eretz Yisrael, but if he does do that, he fulfills a mitzvah. Rav Moshe Feinstein holds a mitzvah kiyumis. It's a mitzvah that's a voluntary mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah you have to do, but if you do it, you get a mitzvah. Others hold that there is an actual obligation for every Jew world over to pick himself up and settle in Eretz Yisrael. However, as long as we're in Galus, okay, until the Ribbono Shel Olam ends this Galus, and he hasn't yet, okay, until that happens, Klal Yisrael can't come en masse to Eretz Yisrael. Individuals can come, a lot of individuals can come, but it's an individual mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah that Klal Yisrael can take themselves and leave Galus en masse. That's called Shaloyalu B'choma, and that, the Rishonim say, is not a proper thing, as all Jews can't pick themselves up out of Galus, but each individual Jew has a mitzvah to live and settle in Eretz Yisrael. However, there are factors that would exempt a person from doing that. Amongst them, Parnassa factors, okay, amongst them, Torah factors, a person can't find a place to learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael, he can't find a place to get married in Eretz Yisrael, can't find a place that's comfortable to live, you know, even minimally comfortable. All of these things, I once wanted to say, the idea is that since the mitzvah is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, you have to be miyushav, you have to be settled. And anything that affects a person's being settled in the land prevents him from fulfilling the mitzvah. You can't be settled. It's like the mitzvah sukkah. Teishvu kein toduru. Right? Mitztayer is potter min ha-sukkah. I wouldn't go that far to say the mitztayer is potter from Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, but it's similar. The mitzvah is Yishuv. Yishuv means being miyushav, being settled. And anything that totally makes a person unsettled are the reasons why a person not only is potter from coming to Eretz Yisrael, but even gives him permission to leave Eretz Yisrael temporarily, according to most opinions, temporarily. In any case, be that as it may, definitely people who live in Eretz Yisrael and have settled themselves in Eretz Yisrael have a chiyuv to remain here and settle here and become as settled as they can. And they, every minute, fulfill a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in many different ways. Now, the idea behind this mitzvah is that Eretz Yisrael is the place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu prepared from the creation of the world to be the place that is most suitable the most conducive for keeping the mitzvahs. This is the place where the mitzvahs have their greatest effect. The effect of mitzvahs in Chutz La'aretz is not the same as the effect in Eretz Israel. And that was said by the Ramban, based on Chazal, right, that even the Rabbonu Shel Olam's connection to Eretz Israel is completely different than his connection to lands in Chutz La'aretz. In Chutz La'aretz, everything happens indirectly. Everything goes through angels. Here in Eretz Israel, everything is direct, and that's a pasuk in the Torah. Eretz asher eini Hashem Elokecha bo, mereishis tashrona v'achrishon. This is a land that has direct connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Jews in Chutz La'aretz, their hashpa, Michtam Eliyahu speaks about it, comes through the angels that are the archangels of that nation, and therefore they are colored. The hashpa of the Jew who lives in Germany is mushpa from the malach that is the conduit for the hashpa, the influence that comes to the German people. And therefore, Judaism in Germany developed with certain characteristics of the German people. Very rigid, on time, yekish, you know, in Hungary, right? This is what Michtam Eliyahu says, not my chiddush. Right? He says it. He says Hungarian Jews take on the Yiddishkeit, the minhagim, are colored by Hungary, not necessarily because the Jews are influenced because they live there, because they could be totally segregated from Goyish society in any of these countries, but because the influence of Hashpah, of Yiddishkeit, comes through these angels. And the reason that the Hungarian people, German people, Lithuanian people, whatever, American people, English people, right, have their characteristics is because their influence also comes through these angels. So it becomes colored as it goes through this conduit of the angel, the tsar of that nation. So Hungarian Jews, what's it called, have their specific nature. He explains that's why Hasidus was much more successful in Russia than it was in Poland, Lithuania, whatever, because or Lithuania at least. He said in Lithuania, at least the educated Lithuanians were more analytical, more interested in intellectual things, whereas Russians are more emotional. Right, so. Chassidus depends more on emotion than intellect, and the Derech HaTorah in Lithuania was more of an intellectual approach rather than an emotional approach, even though both had both ideas, but where the emphasis was. So, and I once wanted to say that I saw in a Sefer, I don't remember the name of the Sefer, in Hakdamah to some Sefer, he says that if you put what I'm going to tell you now together, it's not necessarily negative that the influence is tainted or colored by the angel of the country where Jews live, based on the following. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says that Shmur Malka, who was the king of Persia, once said to Shmuel, the Amora, right, who he was friendly with, he said to him that Mashiach is taking a long time to come. He said, maybe if I offer him one of my fine white steeds, he'll come a little bit faster than on his slow donkey. He was mocking him. So Shmuel said, maybe Mashiach would come faster on one of your fast horses, but he wouldn't have all the beautiful colors that the donkey of Mashiach has. So this Sefer explained in the following way. I'm doctoring it up a little bit. What I remember he said is the following. Had Klal Yisrael been able to receive God's influence directly in Eretz Israel, if we merited that, we didn't have to go into Galus, then all the different kinds of influence would have come directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we would have benefited from all these different facets and aspects. Klal Yisrael is like a rainbow, but the rainbow, if you have white light, it has in it all the colors. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get that influence directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what we needed was to go into Galus, and each place in Galus has another wavelength of that white light. So we got one aspect in Hungary, and one aspect in Poland, and one aspect in Russia, and one aspect in Bavel, and so on. And those are the beautiful colors of Mashiach's donkey, and it takes a long time to go from one place to the other to pick up each aspect. When all Klal Yisrael return to Eretz Yisrael, all of these aspects, the positive parts of them, right, will come together, and each Golus will contribute what it benefited from being in that Golus. There are definitely negative things, and they'll have to get rid of it. But there are positive things. I mean, just the American community, excuse me, the Englishmen here are, but the American community, the English-speaking community, okay, Anglo-Saxon community, there is such a thing. Anglo-Saxon is such a goyish thing, a bunch of Anglo-Saxons. In Eretz Yisrael has a lot to offer that's very positive, right, that the Israelis could learn from, right? Not everything in Eretz Yisrael, Israeli culture, has anything to do with Eretz Yisrael. It's a lot of things that were picked up from the Turks, from the British, from bureaucracies. It has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael. Right? It has to do with the way society grew here, influenced by other nations or whatever. So there are a lot of negative things that the American know-how and American Seder Hadvarim would be very positive, and that there are many negative things that come from not kosher sources of communism, of socialism, of whatever, that are not necessarily have anything to do with Yiddishkeit or anything to do with Eretz Yisrael, but that happens to be Israeli society, right? Even religious Israeli society, so much secular areas that picked up over the years. In any case, and obviously there are other groups here that came from other places that have other things that they could add, right? Aside from the ethnic restaurants besides the pizza parlors and the South American steakhouses or whatever, there are other things that each group can add to Eretz Yisrael. So in any case, so it's not necessarily negative that each Golus picks up a little different coloration, right, a different part of the rainbow, because ultimately that is going to be necessary for Klal Yisrael to be complete, to have all these different approaches to Yiddishkeit. Now, Eretz Yisrael, however, is the place where all of these things mesh. It's the place where all the mitzvahs can be kept. No other place in the world can all the mitzvahs be kept, because all the mitzvahs don't apply anywhere else. It's only in Eretz Yisrael, only when there's a Beis HaMikdash, because some mitzvahs apply to the Beis HaMikdash, some mitzvahs apply specifically to Eretz Yisrael. So it's the place, and not only that, it's the place, like we said, where the mitzvahs can be done to their fullest extent and have their fullest impact. Beyond that, Eretz Yisrael is an Eretz Kedosha. It has Kedusha. The land, the atmosphere is Kodesh. And therefore, this is the place where Klal Yisrael can create a Mamleches Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. It's a place where we can create an environment of Kedusha, if we choose. Right, but it's the most conducive place to do that. In addition, Eretz Yisrael is the place where the Avira of Torah, where it's easier to get, Avira of Eretz Yisrael Machtim. It's easier to learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael. It's easier to get to the depths of Torah in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, the Michtam Eliyahu also says that he felt a difference in the Torah that he learned in Chutz Lars, and also my Rosh Shiva of Gifter Zatzal tells me all the time, that the Torah he learned here in Eretz Yisrael is Eino Dome. He's telling me that a Bacher, what's it called, who can learn in Eretz Yisrael and learn B'Tahara in Eretz Yisrael, he says no such thing in Chutz Lars. It's a different Torah completely. Different, what a person can accomplish here is completely different what you accomplish in Chutz Lars. Impossible to accomplish the same levels of Torah, right, with the same potential in Chutz Lars. In addition, this is the place where Klal Yisrael can really be one. Right? Goy echad ba'aretz. The achdus of Klal Yisrael, as opposed to in Chutz La'aretz, is mefuzar or meforad bein ho'amin. Chutz La'aretz is prone to fragmentation of the Jewish people and separation, and Eretz Yisrael has the ability to unite Jews. Now, obviously, we're all thinking the same thing. Right? I didn't have to say it. So it's obvious that we're thinking, right? What am I talking about? Right, this is the place where there's more fragmentation. Right, in Chutz Lars, if you have two Jews, you already have three parties. Here, if you have one Jew, you have three parties. forget about too. So how could that be? The answer is, I think, very adorable. Hi anosenes. Zele umaze osa elokim. Wherever there's a greater potential for unity, there has to be an equal force for disunity. So if you see a place that has potential for disunity, it must have a tremendous potential for unity. In Chutz La'aretz, its potential for unity isn't that great. Menela's potential for disunity isn't that great. Right? In Chutz La'aretz, the truth is that the machlokas in Chutz La'aretz never is as great as it is here. It's never as intense. When things get here, you know, when there's arguments here, they become extremely intense. Everybody gets, right, and Yeshiva Bachram and Chutz La'aretz don't get so involved in all the politics that goes around that, even the Jewish world. Right, to a certain degree, yeah, they schmooze about it or whatever. Here, it's like, you know, it's like bread and butter. It's like bread and water. It's the chiyus. It's like part of the Seder Hayom. To get involved in the politics, listen to the news, find out what's going on. Everybody has to be, have a direct, you know, party allegiance or whatever, to even if they don't belong to any party, but similar to that. In any case, so if the potential for disunity is great, then the potential for unity is just as great. And therefore, in order to accomplish this, Klal Yisrael has to create an Eretz Yisrael the most conducive atmosphere. So we're commanded to get rid of the seven nations that were here, not to leave them to have a bad influence over us. And the more that a person has a connection to the land, the more he benefits from the skulos of the land. Therefore, like we said, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is the Sura Meirah, get rid of the negative influences and connect yourself to the land as much as you can. Therefore, Yishu means Miyusha. You should be settled in the land. You don't have to be a settler, but you have to be settled. That's the Iker. And therefore, the halacha is that somebody who doesn't have a parnasa, or somebody who can't learn Torah here, or can't find a shidduch here, is allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael, right? At least, according to most opinions, he's allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael temporarily, with Daito Lachzor. He's allowed to go for an extended time, to accomplish these things. Because without Parnassah, without being married to a certain great person, not settled. Without Torah, the whole purpose of Eretz Yisrael is not there. The purpose of Eretz Yisrael is you should come to Eretz Yisrael, the kind of mitzvahs, and be able to have more Torah. And if you can't have it, so you're not benefiting from the benefit of Eretz Yisrael. And halacha-wise, if you leave only for a short time with intention to come back, you're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for any mitzvah, as long as it's only for a short time and you intend to come back. Meaning, and any mitzvah, the Svarim say, Mishnah Berurah paskens it in Hilchos Chol HaMoed, even to go visit friends, not only relatives, friends. That's also a mitzvah to visit friends. But stam to leave Eretz Yisrael for tiulim, just stam to take a vacation in Turkey or anywhere else, or even to go seeing the Grand Canyon. I don't know if that fits as a mitzvah of, you know, Marabu Masecho Hashem. I'm not sure. That would fit as a mitzvah just as much as visiting friends. Maybe. I don't know. But just stam to go to Chutz La'aretz, just like this, is awesome. So before you take a vacation in Chutz La'aretz, you should ask the Shaila whether it's okay or not. There may be ways of making it okay, right? Maybe, but it's not so important. In addition to that, the Chasam Sofer says that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is not just agriculture. It's not just, you know, owning a plot of land and planting it fulfilling the mitzvahs of Tluyus Ba'aretz. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, says the Chasam Sofer, is any profession, occupation that helps to create a functioning society in Eretz Yisrael and makes the people, the society, more settled in Eretz Yisrael, that is a kiyum of mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Because you're miyashev the Eretz. You're settling and making people more settled. If you're a shoemaker in Eretz Yisrael, so you enable people to have shoes, so they can be more settled in the land, creates something that promotes a functioning, settled society in Eretz Yisrael, then you're Mekayim by making your shoes, right, the Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And so too with any occupation you can think of. that is a positive occupation and that helps to settle Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Now, in order to really benefit from what Eretz Yisrael has to offer, so you have to have the right outlook here. You have to have the right hashkafas achayim, the right world view and view of life. Because we've explained in the past in great detail, and I'm not going to go into detail today, but just to mention the idea, that Lech Lecha was an Nisayon. It was a test for Avraham Avinu. Yet Rashi says, Lech Lecha, God told him clearly, L'tovascha l'anascha. It's going to be for your good and your enjoyment. And we explained that good, things that are good for you, not necessarily enjoyable. Right, when my mother, Olea Shalom, would say, eat your vegetables, they're good for you, I knew that they weren't enjoyable. She wouldn't have to resort to that's good for me if it was tasted good. But, so there are many things that are good for you that are not enjoyable. There are many things that are enjoyable that are not good for you. So here God promised Avraham Avinu that it's not only going to be good for him, it's going to be enjoyable too. So where's the Nisayon? If God came to me tomorrow, I knew it was God speaking to me, and he promised me, go to Timbuktu and it'll be good and enjoyable. Why shouldn't I go? Where's the Nisayon? Right? God's guaranteeing to me, right, you're going to benefit more than you will where you are now. So I pick up and go. So where's the Nisayon? So we've explained in the past, one of the ideas is, the Nisayon was, yes, God promised it would be good and enjoyable, but you have to have the right philosophy to know what's good and what's enjoyable. Because you have the wrong philosophy, what's really good and enjoyable you see as bad and oppressive. And what's bad you see as good and enjoyable. So if you don't have the right outlook on life, right, then, look, we just started davening for rain, Baruch Hashem, it looks like the tefillah are being niskabel. But you know the example that the Torah says that Eretz Yisrael is not like the land of Egypt. In Egypt you had a regular cyclical irrigation, the Nile would overflow, but in Eretz Yisrael you have to depend on rain. So that seems to be counterproductive. Wouldn't it be better to have a Nile that overflows? So we explained in the past that it's similar to the curse that the Nachash got. The Nachash got a curse that it would eat dust. And the Chazal say it doesn't mean that Nachashim eat dust. Nothing eats dust. Dust doesn't have any nutritional value. It means that wherever the Nachash is, its food is available to it like dust. Never has a shortage of food. Now that doesn't seem to be a blessing, a curse. That seems to be a blessing. Right? I wouldn't mind a curse like that. Right? Wherever I go, I have a ready food supply. Never will be wanting for food. And yet, in the Midbar, the Jewish people had one day's food supply, and they couldn't save anything for the next day, and if the man didn't fall the next day, they wouldn't have food. And that, l'chora, was a bracha. That God was doing us a favor. So, how could that be? So I once, more than once, told a story over here of a true story. That when I was in Miami, one of my congregants brought me a 17-year-old boy who was a student of hers in her Hebrew class in the public high school. And she called me one day and she said, I have a boy in my class who's already tried to commit suicide twice. He's on the verge of suicide again, and nobody can get to him. He's a Jewish boy. Do you want to try to save a life? So what am I supposed to say? No, I'm busy today. So I said, yeah, okay, so cool. Bring him in. We'll see what we can do. So she brought this boy in and took one look at him. I never saw a sadder, more depressed person in my life. And the boy looked like the world had come to an end and I didn't know about it. So I said to him, you're 17 years old. What could make you so sad and depressed? What in your young life, what could have happened so terrible to you that you look like, you know, the most miserable person I ever saw in my life? He said, I'll tell you. He said, my father is a very, very wealthy man. He's divorced from my mother almost from when I was born. I don't even know my mother came out. And I grew up my father. And my father recently met a woman who he wants to marry. But the woman made it clear to him that she'll only marry him on the condition that he gets rid of me because she doesn't want a 17-year-old around the house cramping her style. So my father called me in a few weeks ago and he took out from his pocket a ring of keys. He He said, these are keys to a plush condominium, fully furnished, that I purchased for you. It's all paid for. It's your bachelor's pad. You can live there, enjoy yourself. Gives me the keys. From his other pocket, he pulls out another set of keys. Said, this is a very fancy sports car that I bought for you. You need transportation. Enjoy your sports car. And then he took out a credit card from his wallet that was on his name. He said, look, you need food, clothing, entertainment, anything within reason. Put it on the credit card. I'll pay the bill. Just one thing. Nice knowing you. Have a good life. Don't call me. I won't call you. So I was much younger at the time. Much younger. And my first thought was, if I was 17 years old, had my own apartment, my own sports car, and unlimited credit, I do not think that I would be miserable or on the verge of suicide. I think I'd be pretty happy. So I felt like telling this kid, you know, everybody has their peckle of tsaras in this world. You have yours, your credit card, your apartment, and your car. I have mine. Let's switch. You give me your tsaras, I'll give you my tsaras. So, but then it hit me that every time this kid lived in the apartment, and every time he drove the car, and every time he used the credit card, it reminded him nobody wants him, that he's totally rejected. Nobody loves him. The only parent he had is now telling him, you know, goodbye. And these were reminders of that. That's a curse. And you can see the kid felt cursed. So the same thing. The Rebbe Nachman said to the Nachash, I don't have anything to do with you. Till the end of time, I'm giving you all the food you'll ever need. Just don't bother me, I won't bother you. That's a curse. The Rebbe Nachman said to Klal Yisrael, you're not going to get one day, more than one day's food supply. I want every day to know you to know that you have an Avichem Sheva Shamayim, a Tata in Him who cares for you, who wants to give you food. Right, every day. Same thing with Eretz Yisrael. I'm not going to, in Eretz Mitzrayim, the Rebbe Nachman put Eretz Mitzrayim on a Shabbos clock. The Nile, on a regular cycle, overflows. They need water. Leave me alone. Let the Nile take care of it. I don't want to have anything to do with Mitzrayim. But Klal Yisrael, mutter, grain, is one of the keys that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give over to anybody else. Something that depends totally on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So God said, I'm not going to put you on a Shabbos clock. You want to deal with directly, because I want you to know you have somebody who cares for you. And because I care for you, sometimes I won't give you rain, because I need to teach you and to educate you or whatever. And you need a little musser, and you need to be a little bit uncomfortable so you'll know that you're on the wrong path. A parent who disciplines a child loves the child. A parent who doesn't discipline his child, lets him stay out all night, go wherever he wants, right, take drugs, play in traffic, that parent doesn't love his child, he hates his child. Because he doesn't care if the child survives or survives as a mensch or is able to exist in this world or not. So a parent who cares enough about a child cares enough to discipline a child. So the Ribbono Shel Olam disciplines us. And he's concerned about the fact that he wants us to know that everything we have comes directly from him because he cares about us. That's a bracha. So therefore, if you don't have the right hashkafa, you can look at Eretz Yisrael and say, this is a terrible place. Here is no irrigation like there is in Mitzrayim, right? A lot of things are missing here, right, that you can get easily in Chutz La'aretz. So this is a not a good place. But if you have the right Hashkafa Sachayim, they say that the Menachem Mendel Mivaytipsk, came to Eretz Yisrael, and 40 days after he was here, he made a big Suda for his Talmidim. So they asked him, you finished Masechta, what's the Suda for? He said, I'll tell you, before I came to Eretz Yisrael, I went to a Makubal, and he told me that I am so fortunate to go to Eretz Yisrael, because when I get to Eretz Yisrael, I'm going to see that every rock is a diamond. So I couldn't wait. I got off the boat, and I looked around, saw a lot of rocks. I didn't see any diamonds. I didn't see diamonds on people's fingers, let alone on the ground. He said, so I fasted for 40 days. Every day in the daytime, since I came here. Today I opened up the windows and I see every rock is a diamond. So today is Kedai Make a Suda. The idea being that if you have the right outlook, you see what other people see as stumbling blocks, you see as diamonds. Right? If you look at Eretz Yisrael the proper way, then what to other people, you know, may seem to be a klala, we don't have a ready food supply, but if you see that because of that you have a direct connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then maybe that is a bracha. And what other people see as a klala, you see as a bracha. And what they see as a bracha, you see as a klala. So you need the right hashkafa. That's why the Torah says that after Lech Lecha, says, Vayelech Avram, Kashur Dibre Elov Hashem, Vayelech Itolot. And And then it says, "Vayikach Avraham es Sara yishto v'yeslot benachi v'yet kol rechusham asher achoshu v'yet hanefesh asher asher b'charon v'yetzu aleches." So there are other answers to this question, but it seems how many times did Avraham leave? First he says he went with Lot. Then it says he took Sarai and he took everybody and he went again. How many times did he go? So I'm trying to say the pshat's like this. The first time where it says he went, it's talking physically. Physically, Avraham went, that means a Sarai went. Avraham and Sarai, ishto kegufo. You don't have to mention Sarai. If Avraham went, then Sarai went with him. And all his Talmidim went, because his Talmidim are like his children. So you don't have to say that his children went. If you say he went, that means his whole family went. The Chiddush is that Lot also went. Lot wasn't really part of his family, he was a nephew. He didn't have to go with Avraham, he chose to go. So the Torah tells us that also Lot went, aside from Avraham, meaning Avraham, the extended Avraham, Lot also went. Okay, that's physically. Now they're on the road. Now it says, Vayikach Avraham. The Rashi says throughout the Torah, whenever it says Vayikach by a human being, it doesn't mean took him physically. It means he convinced them, took him by the heart. Now they're on the road. Avraham says, look, the Rebbe Amram doesn't want us just to change our geographic position and go to Eretz Israel. He wants us to change our whole outlook on life, to make our standards and values and philosophy fit what Eretz Israel can provide for us. So Vayikach Avraham es Sarai yishto v'eslot benachi. He made their whole life view change. They spoke about it on the way, right? To be able to get ready, that when they come to Eretz Israel, they won't see stumbling blocks, they'll see diamonds. That's the Lech Lecha. Based on that, as long as we're in Golos, Chazal say that Bote Knesios, Bote Medrashos, Shabachutz Laretz, have a din of Eretz Israel. That shuls, kehilas, yeshivas in Chutz Laretz have a din of Eretz Israel. Even so, a Rishon, I don't remember where, maybe Rabbi Stein has seen it, or no, I can't find it. I saw a Rishon who says that if you plant something in the ground of a shul, that you have to take off shumas and maishas in Chutz Laretz. You know your position? I saw it somewhere, a long time ago, I can't find it, I know I saw it, I didn't dream it.
That you hinted at something I think should be treated more generally rather than thought. But I've noticed myself that when I've been here, not only the future later, but also my days of arrival later, when I go to Tutsa hours, both things become easier, just there has to be a balance.
Okay, that's true. Zelu mazeh, that's true. Just as much, they always like to say, even though Eretz Israel has the greatest potential for Kedusha and Tahara, you have to remember that Sodom and Amorah was in Eretz Israel. It was not in New York City, right? Nor in Sweden or Denmark or any of the other places. It was here. So Eretz Israel has the potential for a Sodom and Amorah. It has the potential for a Yerushalayim Yirakovish, right? It's Zele Umazeh, 100%. Right? And just as much as you get much more reward for doing mitzvahs here, you get much more punishment doing Averis here. And not doing mitzvahs because it's Armon Shemelech, it's the palace of the king, king's palace. So everything has is a 100%. Everything has a balance. In any case, so the idea being that part of what Eretz Yisrael is the environment. If that's the case, then we can make a kal v'chomer that if Bate Knesios and Bate Midrashos in Chutz La'aretz have a din of Eretz Yisrael, then the Iker of Eretz Yisrael, the place where you benefit the most from Eretz Yisrael, is Bate Knesios and Bate Midrashos in Eretz Yisrael. Right? So, in other words, if at least you can get a surrogate Eretz Yisrael from the environment of a shul, a yeshiva, then in Eretz Yisrael, where you have Eretz Yisrael, and you have that, that's a double Eretz Yisrael. Right? So, a kehila, such as this one, right? And there are very few kehilas in Eretz Yisrael, that is one of the chesronos. Maybe it's not a chesron, maybe the Israelis don't need it, or they think they don't need it. But everybody needs a kehila. Everybody needs a support group and a peer pressure and an organized system to live under. Right? That's the way Klal Yisrael was from the time of the Midbar. Organized kehila, with a rav, with leaders, right, of all different kinds, with support systems of chesed and all different kinds of things. And you yourselves know, I mean, people in Chutz Lars understand that, because that's the only way you can survive there. Because otherwise you're out in the open with a bunch of goy. So the only way you can have that identity, right, is to have the identity to a kehillah. But the truth is that in Eretz Yisrael you need just as much. Just as much, not more. Because there you can't fool yourself to think you're part of society. Here you can fool yourself to think you're part of Jewish society, which is not really Jewish. So kehillahs are very, very, I don't have to, this is, I'm preaching to the converted over here, since you have a Rav that understands us a lot better than I do, and works for us a lot better than I do. But in any case, you see, but you see the results. When you have such a koach, in Baruch Hashem, things get done. I remember giving this shiur in a little broken down hut, on Menucha V'Nachla, right, when I first started. This is a definite improvement. And not just physically, it shows that, you know, a kehillah grows and it spreads out, and that's what should be. And you all know, if you don't know it, you should think about it, right? You all know it pretty much, you should appreciate it more, that you have such a thing. There are very few kehillahs like this in Eretz Yisrael. Right? Even in America, there are, you know, definitely very fine kehillahs there. But also, they can count them on your fingers. So it's, in Europe, even less. So you have to be thankful that you that the Rebbe Shem gave you the schus of being not only in Eretz Yisrael, but in a kehillah in Eretz Yisrael, which is double Eretz Yisrael. It's batik nesius and batik medrashas shebe Eretz Yisrael. So that, now, the connection to Bris Milah is that on one of the schuyos that we had to be in Eretz Yisrael is Bris Milah. To the point where Arabs who also have Bris Milah also have a schus on Eretz Yisrael, which we unfortunately know about. However, there is a glimmer of hope. The Zohar says that since the Mila of the Arabs is only external, their kesher to Eretz Yisrael is also only external, and therefore temporary. Unfortunately, the temporary is a little bit longer than I would have considered. The hopefully, right, that temporary will end very soon, and the rightful owners of Eretz Yisrael will get ownership back completely. But the idea being, what's Bris Milah? Bris Milah also is in the body of the person, that kesher to the Ribono Shel Olam. If you have that personal kesher, then you can have the kesher to through Eretz Yisrael in a general way. If you don't have that personal kesher, then you don't have that schus to have Eretz Yisrael, which is the next shlav. So that's the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Is obviously a lot more to speak about, but I think that in a nutshell condenses it.